News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Hour 2 of your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew is rolling on. We do have a jam-packed show today. Julio Rivera will be joining us shortly. Dr. Yeoman Bauman, the stand-up economist, will be coming in studio at 8. Pete Hegseth at 8:35. Got an email a few minutes ago from the Johnson campaign, the Jeff Johnson campaign. Everybody's still talking about Tim Pawlenty.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not he's going to get in the race, everybody's expecting him to. There was a tweet that went out yesterday from a local reporter, and I'm blanking on which one, but it basically said that Pawlenty spent several hours meeting with hundreds of people regarding a potential run for governor.
Okay.
Came out of it very energized and excited, so it's happening. He's running. Jeff Johnson, I'll paraphrase this email. He says, "I'll always be frank and straightforward as your governor and as your candidate. Will not duck tough conversations as they arise. So I want you to know where I stand on the current media obsession with Tim Pawlenty's potential candidacy for governor." And basically, he goes on to say, "If Tim is planning on getting in the race and seeking and abiding by the GOP endorsement, I welcome him. If, however, he seeks to ignore the endorsement and tries to essentially by a primary victory, it probably won't end well and will significantly hurt Republicans' chances in November," saying a primary battle will be contentious and costly. Johnson goes on to say, "There is no clamor among Republicans on the ground for Pawlenty or anyone else to enter this race. Money alone will not win this election in a primary or in November, and the 2016 presidential election showed us the blueprint for winning. There are millions of hardworking Minnesotans who will vote for an aggressive reform agenda that fundamentally changes the way our system works and gives them a voice. Having a candidate who can prove they will do that is critical to winning. I can and I will." Interesting.
Game on, man.
Yeah, interesting. Sort of
throw the gauntlet down.
Yeah.
I like it.
Like a preemptive strike.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah,
from Johnson to the Pawlenty camp.
I think it's a smart move that he do that. You know, get out ahead of it and you know lay the groundwork. What are you going to do? How are you going to handle this?
Yeah, because it seems very, very clear to me that this is going to come down to a primary contest, and it's going to come down to a primary contest between Johnson and Pawlenty, and it's going to be expensive and it's going to be costly, and Pawlenty's going to show up with a pretty big bankroll. It's going to be a tough fight.
Well, he needs to pull the trigger on this, and we need to get rolling. I mean, I'm with you. I believe that he is running. I don't think there's you know, much chance that it's not happening based on everything we've seen. But for a lot of people, they're going to be sitting back and holding their sort of opinions and conversations about it until he actually goes and you know makes it formal. And I think he needs to do that. Let's get going. And I'm glad that Johnson's without choosing anybody in this whole fight yet. That's seemed like a really smart move on Johnson's part to get out ahead of it.
Joining us now, DACA analyst Julio Rivera, editorial director of Reactionary Times. Good morning, sir. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning, John. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. The Senate is out of CBS. The Senate's going to begin a rare open-ended debate on immigration and the fate of dreamers. It started yesterday. Republican senators say they're going to introduce to Donald Trump's plan through his proposal. They say that though his proposal has no chance of passage, Trump may be the most influential voice in the conversation. And let's start off here, Julio. I believe, and actually Drew and I were just talking about this, that Trump is if any president was going to go and get something done, not just on DACA, but on immigration reform. That a little bit like Trump there, didn't I? DACA. But on immigration reform, it is President Donald Trump. And the reason being is that Julio, as well as we do, that this has been used, the immigration debate has been used by both sides for decades to their own political advantage. And I'd like to believe that Trump just wants to go and get something done, and he's not beholden to either side to go and get something done.
Well, I think he definitely wants to get something done. Whether or not a reasonable proposal actually comes out of Congress is anyone's guess. I mean, I look at it like this. At this point, the intent is whether or not this Congress really wants the enforcement of immigration laws that are already on the books.
Right.
I mean, I believe Pat Buchanan said a couple decades ago, you know, we don't necessarily need, you know, a billion-dollar wall. You know, all we really need to do is enforce the rule of law. Now, a lot of these legislators are, you know, pretty much, they have the Chamber of Commerce and those types of people, you know, paying them. funding their campaigns, they love that cheap labor that comes with illegal immigration. They love it with, you know, the issuance of visas at will whenever they can get them for certain work projects. You know, we all know that these people never leave the country once they come here on a work visa, and then we wind up with the problems that we have. So I think that one thing that Trump did that was a mistake was he should not have signed the last budget. What he should have done was he should have, whatever it was that he was going to work out for these DACA recipients, should have been worked into that budget on a long-term spending deal, which gave the Republicans everything that they wanted, but maybe granted some semblance of legalization to the 600,000 to 800,000 people that actually fall into the official DACA category and not just people that are arbitrarily called dreamers.
Yeah, the fear, you have some senators are discussing a bare-bones plan to protect dreamers for a year in exchange for a year's worth of security money. This is what scares me, is that we got an opportunity here. Can we not just kick this down the road for a year? Can we go and get something actually done? And unfortunately, I feel like that's where this is going to go. They're going to kick it down the road for a year, and we're going to be back having this argument all over again.
I know, but I mean, I look at it like this. The best thing that they should do, right? If let's say we're going to actually respect the laws of the land, you know, and live by the rule of law, you know, these people more or less should be, as insensitive as it may sound to some people, basically rounded up and deported. You know, a lot of these dreamers were in this country, you know, what, 15 to 20 years, some even longer. I mean, they've had the opportunity to try to apply for some kind of legalization, to apply for citizenship, to do something about that. Obviously, you know, we're well past that point. Now, another thing I believe that, you know, Trump can actually do, and this would be something that would require some kind of, I guess it would take a lot more political will than maybe a president would want to show in our politically correct climate. But basically to go ahead and mobilize something similar to what President Eisenhower did in the 1950s, which was, you know, and obviously the name of this is something that's going to be very controversial to people in our society today, would have people gasping and fainting. But it was referred to as Operation Wetback. But it was very effective in getting millions of people out of our country. If he went ahead and, let's say, provided some semblance of legalization and protection to people that fell into that small sliver of the Dreamer or DACA category and went ahead and got the teeth to go ahead and enforce immigration law and get out the rest of the millions that are out here, I think that that would be something reasonable. The Democrats can go back to their constituency and say, we protected the Dreamers. The Republicans can go back to their constituency and say, you know, we enforced the rule of law and we got millions of illegal immigrants out of our country.
Well, and what you speak to, it shows how far the narrative has shifted, because in putting the label of dreamers on these individuals who went and signed up for DACA, it ends up, you know, creating this picture of a much different picture than what the reality actually is. And you and I both know, and we all know, that we're so far down the road from ever having the types of plans that were implemented decades ago. You know, the question is now, what do we do? What happens with the DACA recipients? And I don't think the Democrats are willing to go and solve the problem. I mean, Schumer just yesterday was already talking about how he doesn't want the DACA fix to be part of a larger immigration overhaul. He wants it to be a narrow bill focused on dreamers, doing that thing with my fingers. But he's also including parents in that. They're doing what they did when they had the power by trying to lump a bunch of other stuff with those individuals, knowing full well that the GOP is never going to go along with it.
Yeah, I mean, but the other thing, too, is that the GOP has to use this as a bargaining chip towards getting other things done, but they've already fumbled that. I mean, you know what, the albatross of a long-term budget that was just passed, although it didn't address a lot of things, would have been a perfect opportunity to go ahead and try to, you know, use the Dreamers to the Republicans' advantage. The one thing with the actual Dreamers, the people that do fall into that category and have applied for that protection, believe it or not, the statistics show that a lot of them, you know, the vast majority of them are gainfully employed and participating in our system, contributing to our system. We've already made the investment to educate them. Mm-hmm. So you have to ask yourself, are they worth more to the United States here, you know, contributing to the system, or, you know, do we just go ahead and send them away when we'll never get anything out of them? I mean, there's some of them that are even in the military. You know, so that's why I think they fall into a little bit of a different category and maybe should be treated somewhat differently.
Absolutely.
Although, you know, I don't know that I would necessarily want to grant them full citizenship.
We're talking with Julio Rivera from ReactionaryTimes.com, a DACA analyst. Julio, in your work, and for the record, you are a Hispanic, a Puerto Rican descent. In your work and in your activism, we've been saying on this show now for a while that we don't believe the Democrats really want a solution to this problem because it's just too valuable to them. You know, come election time, they got to run for reelection every 2 years, every 4 years, every 6 years, etc. And this is a great issue for them, and it's proven to be very beneficial to them, and a solution would sort of just take that off the table. Do you get the sense that it feels to me like more and more people are sort of realizing that and reaching that conclusion? Is that something that you've picked up on as well in your activism and your work on this issue?
Yeah, I mean, it's just another a group of people that the Democrats can just go ahead and exploit, and if this is ever permanently fixed, you know, they're not going to have that part of their constituency to sort of lean on, or people who are sensitive to that, you know. But I you know, the Democrats basically, you know, do that with every little group of, you know, every little sliver of people that they can find, whether it's, you know, women. They've always done that with, minorities, but the immigration issue kind of works against their minority strategy, because think about who truly gets screwed, quite frankly, the hardest because of the fact that we're not enforcing immigration law. You're talking about people of color, illegal immigrants of color, you know, black people in particular, you know, and especially those that are on, you know, the lower income wage scale. You know, they're the ones that get hurt the hardest by immigration, but they don't see it because of, you know, the whole identity politics unfortunately resonates so powerfully with people on the left. But I'll tell you this much, because of Trump, that's becoming less of a powerful issue. I think people have kind of opened up their eyes to what the Democrats are doing. But unfortunately, if a weak, lay-down Republican Congress doesn't go ahead and address these issues and take advantage of what the political climate is right now, they will continue to use this as a bargaining chip in the future and keep kicking the can down the road.
Julio, before we let you go, you're a reformed Democrat. You haven't been on our side for very long. So first off, welcome. But why the switch? It happened during the Obama years. What was the catalyst for you?
Well, I became a Republican actually when I was in the military, actually over 20 years ago.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't really become a hardcore conservative and didn't become an activist and start going to events and start, you know, doing the things that I'm doing now until really the Obama years. Really, it was the stimulus package when I saw $1 billion, $787 billion, almost $1 trillion when you combine the $350 left over from Bush's bailout. That really concerned me as a parent. And, you know, I was thinking in terms of what the national debt was, the way it was spiraling out of control. And I really thought it was important that we got a hold on these issues.
We just got a few seconds left. But with that, any thoughts on this $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan that's been proposed?
Listen, I mean, we do need to do some semblance of infrastructure. We obviously, our roads and bridges are not in the best of shape. I think that we kind of got, you know, played out by Obama and with all that green energy money in the last stimulus package. That money should have went to the supposedly shovel-ready jobs.
Yeah.
I'd like to see competitive bidding. I'd like to see us get these services done at the cheapest possible price we've got to eliminate, you know, this culture where one third out of every federal dollar is only really what winds up getting used, and the other two thirds get corrupted and lost somehow.
Julio Rivera, again, editorial director, reactionarytimes.com. You can find him on Twitter at oh yeah, it's Julio. Thanks so much for the time this morning, man. It was great speaking with you.
Thank you so much. God bless and have a great day.
Take care.
Coming up, we'll give you a bit of a recap. We've got an individual who dropped out of the Minnesota governor race. We did have the special elections yesterday. We'll get you up to speed on the Ramsey County judge dismissing the lawsuit against Fischbach. First, though, CNN in trouble?
A little bit.
Slashing some jobs?
Cutting some jobs?
People going to be out of work? Mm. Applications going to Fox News maybe soon?
Justice.
Wah, wah. Oh, now you got me doing it. Twin Cities News Talk. AM 1130, 103.5 FM.
My plans are all coming together.
Justice and Drew, along with Sam, out of Fox News. So you think when they wrote this story out of Fox News that they did it with a bit of glee? CNN is slashing its digital operations as some of its expensive new initiative struggle.
Yep.
With plans to lay off as many as 50 people as soon as this week, according to Vanity Fair.
Wah, wah.
Man, they spend so much money. I mean, just personally
trying to carve out a space in that digital world is expensive.
Yeah, man. Well, you look at that Be Me app that they purchased when they bought that YouTube guy.
$25 million.
Just a ridiculous amount, and it just failed. just well, that's money not well spent. CNN Worldwide President Jeff Zucker has poured millions and millions of dollars into CNN's digital operations, but some of these costly moves have not paid off.
I know digital operations encompasses more than just their website, but their website sucks.
Yeah, it does. Their website's awful.
Their website, I refuse to go to it. You know, we do show prep, and part of show prep is trying to cull information from as many different sources as possible, because you'll get different versions. So you'll find different audio clips or different quotes depending on, you know, which source of a story you're looking at. But CNN, man, they just want to hammer your face with video.
I don't
every
like
every time you go there, the videos just start playing and they won't stop playing, and you'll click the little X and then another one will start. I was like, go away. I didn't come here to watch a bunch of videos.
I hate having my face hammered, especially by CNN.
What are you pointing at me for?
Because you need to get that.
Oh. I knew what he was pointing for. BuzzFeed reported.
Accusing me of something.
And you like to hammer his face.
With it.
There's a little bit of both.
Thanks for the clarification. BuzzFeed reported in September that CNN's digital unit was facing a $20 million budget shortfall. Vanity Fair reported that CNN Digital missed its revenue targets over the last year by tens of millions of dollars. In recent years, CNN has been criticized for spending heavily on its digital operations without a coherent strategy and for appointing executives from old-school television operations without the requisite expertise as its digital leadership.
Yeah, first, come up with a coherent strategy.
Yeah.
Then throw millions at something. Come on.
See, this...
It's not complicated here.
It's stories like this that make me, and these are private companies, it's stories like this that make me fearful when you go and see government infrastructure plans to the tune of $1.5 trillion. Now, granted, we haven't seen all the details of it, but how many different examples could we give of just in our own line of work throughout the years, you know, through the 21 some odd years been doing radio, of times when, like, companies we worked for spent money and then failed to go and try to go and reap the benefits of that. When they, they ended up, and this was after, it was after you left, when I was working in Arizona, they ended up putting 2 hours of the 4-hour show that I was doing on the local CW channel. They had some clearing. They had some space available. They said, hey, we'll do this.
You had a TV show.
TV show, you know, the radio on TV. And so I wasn't given any sort of directive. I mean, they put in these cameras. They had a whole, it was basically a TV studio in the radio studio. And they gave me, like, no direction whatsoever. Well, they just turned the cameras on. And it would just have you just on. And I'm like, well, you've got to do, you've got, they spent tens of thousands of dollars on this. And they never bought, and so we actually made something of it. I mean, during the commercial breaks, we had audio, we had video. We were showing movie trailers that I'm 100% sure we were not supposed to be showing on TV without getting permission. But actually, we had a really nice little show going on. And they did nothing to promote it.
Yeah.
After spending all this money.
Well, it's one thing to have a strategy to create a product and build an audience for that project or product, and then it's another thing to have a strategy to monetize that product,
right.
Monetize that audience. They're two different mindsets, two different approaches. And you're right, a lot of companies, they'll focus all their energy on step one. And then they'll find themselves not quite knowing how to get to step two. And in the digital world, that's even more of an issue. That's even more of a problem because digital consumers have gone out of their way and have developed all sorts of tools and strategies to avoid being advertised.
Right.
They are removing ads from their digital experience by choice. They don't want them on there. So companies have had to become more obtrusive and more invasive with the type of advertising that they do. I don't envy anybody who is in charge of trying to monetize something on a digital front. It's a tough job.
Oh yeah,
because your audience clearly does not want that experience. They don't want to be advertised to, and they go out of their way to skip advertisements, to remove advertisements, to do ad blocks. There's a new thing now when you go to websites, now a little window will pop up. I see you're using an ad blocker. Would you consider removing it for this site?
No.
No.
It's like a red flag that I definitely don't want to turn off my ad blocker. Yeah. Thanks, website.
And the rare time that I'm like, you know what? I like this site. I'll give him a little love.
Oh.
I'll turn off ad blocker.
Oh, you're a nice guy.
It's pop-up after pop-up after pop-up.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, that was a mistake.
Yeah, a fool, but a nice guy. To what we were talking about a moment ago. So, Casey Neistat, that was the guy. I never heard of this dude before. He's a YouTube star, Casey Neistat. He was hired by Zucker on the recommendation of his teenage son. Oh, that's good.
Good idea.
Are you kidding me? He abruptly walked away from CNN less than 2 years after they reportedly paid more than $20 million for his video sharing startup, Beamy, which we had never heard of. And the stat feared, Neistat or whatever the heck this dude's name is, appeared on the cover of The Hollywood Reporter with Zucker and three of the network's biggest stars, Jake Tapper, Anthony Bourdain, and W. Kamau Bell. Did they know who he was?
Is it significant at all that, I mean, I know who Anthony Bourdain is. I don't know who W. Kamau Bell is.
Right.
And the only one that I actually associate with CNN is Jake Tapper.
Yeah.
Like, I don't associate Anthony Bourdain with CNN at all.
No. Well, he's a food guy, right?
Yeah. I thought he was.
Or he's
What's he doing on CNN?
Or is he a travel guy? He's a guy that travels and eats food.
He travels and eats.
And eats food. Okay.
Yeah. On CNN.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah. So basically, Anthony Bourdain's job is to live. Because if you travel, you're going to have to eat.
CNN pays him a lot of money to fly around the world and eat.
To live.
I can do that.
Now, Neistat is gone. CNN's virtual reality productions and Snapchat efforts will be downsized, while CNN's money stream app is expected to be scuttled. CNN will also reorganize a team that focuses on digital companions to various original programs, such as Anthony Bourdain, Parts Unknown. Does he find them? This is Life with Lisa Ling. CNN did not respond when they asked for a byline for the story. You wonder if this is the start of something more. You know, I haven't seen CNN's ratings in a while, but man, yeah. It's incredible to me how much just stepping back away from this digital operation part just to talk CNN for a second. It's incredible to me to just watch how their brand has completely changed. And I mean, I put them with DMZ now for crying out loud.
Yeah, that's gotten really bad. It's been the ascendance of Trump and Trump's win has been. I mean, their ratings are still pretty solid in certain shows because they've become sort of an outlet for the hashtag resist movement. But it's been bad overall for their brand. It really has. And their digital efforts, I think, are really off the mark. I mean, we do CNN HLN shows.
Right.
You know, I go on Ashley Banfield every once in a while. You go on SC Cup every once in a while. Trying to promote our appearances on those shows by using clips from them is incredibly difficult.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you just put them online? Why don't you just put them on YouTube? Give me something I can embed and promote.
That's a really good point.
And they don't do that.
Yeah.
At least they haven't. Maybe they've started recently, but in my experience, hey, I'd like to promote my appearance on your show. Give me something I can put up on our website. Oh, yeah, we don't do that.
How much must it sting for CNN every time that Trump calls them fake news, especially considering that they're the ones that got him to win the primary in the first place?
Yeah.
You created that. All right, coming up.
They also created the term fake news.
True story.
Yeah.
Not fake news. Coleman drops out of a race for Minnesota governor. We'll also get into this ridiculous Star Tribune editorial on the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act, written by Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman and John Choi of the Ramsey County Attorney.
Justice in...
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice Andrew, along with Sam, screening your phone calls at 651-989-5855. I just tweeted out a link to the YouTube page. It's got like some 300 some odd clips from the old radio TV show that I did. I was telling Drew that we ended up making something that was kind of cool because we were still live. We were on the radio for less time than we had on TV, so we had extra TV time to do stuff. So when they were in commercial break, we could actually go live on TV that wasn't on the radio, so we could do all kinds of fun stuff. Very early on, like within the first week when we launched, we didn't really have a game plan. So when we weren't live on the radio and it was just us in studio, we were just kind of hanging out and talking, but we happened to be on TV. I remember like one of the first days I was hungry, and sometimes I'd eat during the breaks, and so I was munching, and one of the TV sales guys comes running up to the second floor where the studio was and started screaming at one of the managers, going, "How am I supposed to sell this when the guy's live on TV eating a banana?"
Did you forget you were on TV?
I didn't care. That was the whole directive was just be yourself and be behind the scenes. Look at what's going on.
When we're on break from radio, I eat bananas.
I eat bananas.
That's what I do. Yeah. I'm being myself.
It's not bananas. It's baby carrots. It happens. Yeah, that didn't last.
At least it
forever.
Wasn't a corn dog.
Yeah, true story.
Yeah,
It was a good banana. Though. I still remember that banana.
You still remember that banana?
I do. I remember the story, don't I?
It was a very memorable banana.
Yeah. If you want to go and see the clips, I just put it up there on YouTube.
So, from the Star Tribune, former St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman ended his campaign for governor yesterday, following a poor showing in party straw poll last week, further narrowing the DFL field in an open race with high stakes for both political parties.
Yeah, the only thing that's compelling to me about this now is how it affects the race as a whole. You know, it does say in the story that Coleman's departure is the latest clarifying development on the DFL side of the governor's race. Attorney General Lori Swanson announced recently that she would run for re-election instead of running for governor. Campaign finance reports show the significant cash advantage for Tim Walz. For DFL insiders, Coleman's decision offers some release by diminishing the chance for a major DFL battle in the August primary. Second and third place finishers in the straw poll, State Auditor Rebecca Otto, State Representative Aaron Murphy, have committed to abiding by the endorsement of the DFL delegates at the June state convention. So, yeah, not a huge surprise that Coleman got out.
Well, I was a little surprised I was a little surprised that he didn't do as well, or it didn't do better in the straw poll, that he didn't do well, leading up to this point, seeing how he did. Yes, I'm not too surprised that he dropped out, but I thought he would, he'd last longer on the island than he did.
Well, and that speaks to, and maybe a bit of a stretch, but I think that speaks to a lot of the unknown factors, and when you look at the Republican side of things, why we really aren't going to know what it looks like until Pawlenty, you know, goes all in. And I think the Coleman example is a good one. You saying you were a little bit surprised by that, thinking he would have done well, but these things are very difficult to predict. And I think that because of this is a really good example of how we don't really know what is on the mind of the voters right now until we have all the pieces fully in place.
Yep, yep. If you're looking at the landscape right now, the DFL field is definitely narrowing. It's definitely thinning out. Swanson dropped out. Coleman has dropped out. It's looking like it's going to be sort of Waltz and Otto heading into the endorsement and most likely into a primary as well. But we'll see.
Be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I feel like, you know, Republican candidates are seriously rooting for Rebecca Otto.
Yeah. Absolutely. Just for the jokes. Just for that alone. Earlier in the show, during Sam's Top 5, we did have lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien on, just running through some of the headlines and stories we covered earlier. The Ramsey County District Court judge, as lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien predicted, dismissed the lawsuit attempting to block Lieutenant Governor Michelle Fischbach from serving in the state Senate while holding the Lieutenant Governor's seat. It's not all over yet, though.
No, this is probably...
Hopefully it is, but...
Probably most certainly going to be appealed, but the arguments that the judge made in dismissing this case, I think, are going to be really, really tough to overcome. One is that the plaintiff was unable to prove any sort of damages, to prove any sort of harm, and disenfranchisement, because there's no indication that Michelle Fischbach cannot fulfill her role as a senator while also holding the lieutenant governor seat.
Right.
There are no assigned duties to the lieutenant governor seat. None whatsoever. And the other argument that I think is going to be really tough for the plaintiff to overcome is that the only mechanisms in place to remove an elected legislator are a recall election or a two-thirds vote from the legislature.
Yeah, and the recalls usually are not successful.
They're tough to put together.
Yeah.
I mean, they're tough to get, and then it's tough to get people to turn out for them. And Michelle Fischbach enjoys a great deal of support in that district. So recall election is kind of off the table in that. So now you're looking at a two-thirds vote of the legislature. That's not going to happen.
So to that point, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, but out of the Pioneer Press, after weeks of campaigning in the frigid cold by Minnesota Democrats and Republicans, voters decided two special elections yesterday that left the balance of power in the state legislature unchanged. Nevertheless, the new members will head to the House and Senate when the legislative session convenes next week. You got Democrat Carla Bingham, a Washington County commissioner who will replace Dan Schoen. In southern Minnesota, Republican Jeremy Munson easily beat DFLer Melissa Wagner. No flipping of seats, no referendum on sexual harassment, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we talked about it a little bit earlier, Drew, but what effect, if any, do you think that the balance of power remaining as it is in the legislature would potentially have on the Ramsey County decision with Fischbach moving forward? Do you think that's more likely or less likely based off of what happened in the special election for them to continue to push the Fischbach issue?
More likely.
More likely to push the Fischbach
issue? Yeah, because if the GOP had been able to flip that seat, then losing the Fischbach seat wouldn't have disrupted the balance of power. Now, if they are somehow a long shot unable to unseat Michelle Fischbach from her seat in the Senate and have a special election there, there is a chance, you know, that they could become evenly split.
Yeah, I just wonder, based off the judge's ruling, whether or not, you know, their reading of the tea leaves, they're thinking they still have a shot at that, or if they think that it's less likely now, or if they just, for the sake of argument, see it through the end and take the necessary next step, just in the off chance that things go their way.
Well,
and waste everybody's time.
They've proven that they're clearly willing to waste everybody's time and taxpayer money to try to give Tom Bach his DFL majority in the Senate that he so desperately wants. They are willing, I think they're willing to go to almost any lengths possible to try to give Tom Bach that majority back. He's desperate for it. He's outright said that he's going to die trying. to get a DFL majority. I just don't. I don't see.
I don't take him seriously. I don't see that, a feat.
You should always take Tom Bach seriously. It's terrifying. I just don't see a feasible path ahead. I mean, there's no indication that that Michelle Fischbach is going to willingly give up her seat. There's no indication that the Senate will refuse to seat her. And Judge Guthman put together a really strong argument that I think is going to be incredibly difficult for the Supreme Court to overturn.
Yeah.
In saying that, first of all, she's not even a seated senator yet. You know, she hasn't taken her seat as a senator. The Senate has to agree to seat her. All these things have to happen before you can even attempt to make the argument that you as a constituent are being disenfranchised. Okay. So after all those things happen, then you can start to try to make the argument, but you still have to prove that she is unable to serve her duties as a senator, that she is unable to represent her district because she also carries this title of lieutenant governor that, again, has no responsibilities.
Well, she's doing website updating, right? And she's feeding the fish.
I don't understand the strategy that they're going to employ to try to remove Fischbach from the seat. And then, even after all that, you have to have a special election in a pretty fairly Republican district.
Let's go and talk with Mike in Anoka. Good morning, Mike. Welcome to Justice and Drew. You want to comment on Otto and Walls?
Yes. Good morning, guys. Thank you for taking my call. Can we do a little Democratic trick and do the Operation Chaos and all of us conservatives go out and vote for Rebecca Otto and send her to the top?
I will not advocate.
Oh, guy,
no, I know you guys strategy. Don't have to. But Mike from Anoka.
That's a dangerous game you play, sir. That's a dangerous game you play, sir.
But it's been done on a national level all over the United States. Hence, where did we get the idea from the Dems?
Yeah, that's what they did with Trump.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, we've all seen Hillary Clinton's emails where early on in the process, their strategy was to elevate Trump above the rest of the GOP field.
And that's exactly why I don't want to risk it with Otto.
We could have a reverse Trump.
I don't even want to consider it. 651-989-5855.
She is a little bit less of a formidable opponent than Tim Walz.
Let's hold off on the Reciprocity Act editorial, because that's going to take some time to properly shred, because it's many paragraphs of stupidity that need to be covered. Let's go here. Out of the Hill. Speaking of Trump, President Trump's budget request provides funding for special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation for fiscal 2019, a potential sign that the probe won't be ending soon.
I thought he was going to fire him any day now. That's what they keep telling me.
Well,
I keep getting emails from Nancy Pelosi asking for $5 just in case.
Just in case.
Trump fires Mueller.
What are you going to do with $5? Politico reported the budget released yesterday anticipates Mueller's team will continue its current rate of spending about $10 million per year. Yeah, so, you know, the way they had this worded, Trump's budget funds, I get it. You know, you go in, it's like there's a line item. Like Trump is signing off, and I will continue to give $10 million for Mueller to investigate me. No, it just happens to be a part of the budget, and he hasn't fired him, so they continue to be funded.
Yeah. Because he's not going to fire him.
The White House has said in the past it expects the special counsel's investigation to be finished quickly. That's funny. White House attorney Ty Cobb told Politico that Trump's team is not looking for these guys to close up shop, but we're interested in trying to get the president's piece of this resolved. A spending report released in December, which included spending from the time Mueller was appointed through May of 2017, in May of 2017 through September, showed $3.2 million of direct spending. Another $3.5 million was spent on personnel assigned to Mueller's team, according to Politico. That's a really expensive dossier that Fusion GPS cooked up. That's a lot of money. Mueller is investigating, of course, the Russian election interference and potential ties between the Trump campaign and Russia. Trump has repeatedly, as we just said, denied collusion and referred to the Russia probe as a witch hunt and said he's not going to fire Mueller. At least he wasn't planning on it.
So will they stop hammering that narrative now?
No.
course not.
No, of course. No.
There's, yet another piece, one more piece of evidence that indicates that Trump has no plans on firing Mueller, but they're going to keep running with it.
So next hour, we will dive into this editorial and tell the Senate to reject the Dangerous Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. This act will force Minnesota to recognize permits from states with much laxer rules. Major events will be public safety nightmares. What they lay out in this, just as a bit of a preview, one line in this alone, and again, this was written by Mike Freeman, the Hennepin County attorney, and John Choi, the Ramsey County attorney. One of the biggest events of the year went off without any major clashes, in part because of Minnesota's standards on concealed carry. So they're attributing the success of the Super Bowl to our standards on concealed carry. That seems like a bit of a leap.
Really? Just a bit?
I'm holding back until we get into it. Until we get into it next hour. Our common sense Minnesota gun laws allowed our police officers to do their jobs and allowed football fans to partake in the festivities without fearing for their safety. Well, yeah, we had a lot of security. No, I'm kidding. We'll get into all of it again coming up next hour.
It is chock full of stupid.
Plus, we got Pete Hegseth at 8:35. Next, though, joining us in studio, very pleased to welcome. He is the stand-up economist. We get that right? Yoram Bauman. We're speaking with him. He'll be in studio with us next on Twin Cities News Talk.
Miss any of